Your financial choices may discuss various financial related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Today is March 4th, 2015. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 18,096, the NASDAQ at 4,967, and the S&P at 2,098. Last week, we talked about legal documents in a box, you know, the shortcomings of using software for your legal documents. And I want to thank Dennis Pappas, an attorney from Vassiliadis Law Offices, for being here as my guest last week. He did a great job. Thank you, Dennis. Tonight, we are going to discuss the differences between tax deductions and tax credits, what they are, and how to plan for them. And I have a guest with me this evening as well, a familiar guest, Rod Young. I'll introduce him in just a moment. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. If you have them, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Judy Ann is in the studio, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you're not comfortable talking on air, you can just give your question to Judy Ann, and she'll bring it into the studio. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we'll do the best to answer them. The number again is 610-758-8810, and email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So I want to introduce a frequent guest host for me, and it is Rod Young.
Hello, Lori.
Hi, Rod. Rod is a CPA, a CFP, and a PFS, a financial advisor, and he runs Executive Edge at Valley National Financial Advisors, and my go-to guy here, so... Thanks great. For coming well, that, and relieving me, Rod.
Yeah, well, thanks for that great introduction. And it's great to be back. It has been a little while.
Since we've done it together.
Oh,
Rod
yes.
and I
yep.
usually tag team, but because it's tax season and we're a little bit busy this time of year, Rod offered to come in and sit in with me on some of these shows in March so we can answer lots of tax questions for listeners.
It is that time of year. So,
do you want to tell the folks a little bit about yourself and your practice and then
sure,
we'll get into
sure.
the show?
Yep. So, yes, I'm at Valley National for almost 7 years now and CPA and certified financial planner like yourself and, you know, primarily work with individuals on their financial planning, their tax planning, their investments, helping them to manage their investments, and in particular working with business executives, helping them to understand and utilize their various executive compensation programs. That's kind of the niche that I'm mostly involved with at Valley National.
Yeah, some complicated strategies that can be used, but you seem to be able to do it in a very easy to understand and easy to kind of adapt.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, we try.
Yes. So thank you for being here. Folks, tonight what we're going to talk about are tax deductions and tax credits and what those differences are, and then hopefully we'll have time to talk about some of our favorites and then how to plan for some of those as well. And we'll get into it, but at the same time, we like to keep the topics during this time of year open for tax questions as well. For us, it's fun to answer tax questions. And if you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So, Rod, when we talk about tax deductions, there's tax deductions that we have on you know, page one of the return. We have itemized deductions or standard deduction. And then there's also something called tax credits. Can you briefly describe what the difference between tax deductions are and tax credits?
Sure, Lori. Yeah, so a tax deduction is an item that you would report on your tax return that would reduce your taxable income. So thus ultimately reduce your income tax, but it is not a dollar for dollar reduction in the tax. It's typically a dollar for dollar reduction in your taxable income, although there's some phase outs out there, so it's not necessarily a dollar for dollar reduction in your taxable income. A tax credit, on the other hand, literally can be a dollar for dollar reduction in the tax itself. So a dollar of tax credit is worth far more than a dollar of tax deduction.
So we like tax credits, so we're going to talk about tax credits. We're going to start by talking about tax deductions briefly. We're going to give you an overview, and then we're going to talk about tax credits. And there's tax credits, as Rod said, is a dollar for dollar reduction in the tax due. There are even some credits, folks, that give you a refundable credit.
Great point.
So that's, we don't see it as often, but we will talk about that a little bit as well. So on page one of the return, let's start on the first most obvious place where people can get some deductions.
Sure. And these are the kind of deductions that we refer to as above the line deductions.
Completely forgot about that saying, but you're right.
And so these are deductions that reduce your adjusted gross income. So in a way, these types of deductions can be a little more valuable potentially than itemized deductions, because many itemized deductions are subject to phase outs based on your adjusted gross income. So these above the line deductions that actually reduce your adjusted gross income are actually typically a little more tax beneficial to you.
And for people who don't itemize as well.
Oh, absolutely.
People can have these even if they don't itemize.
Yep, good point.
So let's look at some of those.
So, you know, the first one that you'll see on Form 1040, is, and it's right on line 23, is educator expenses. And this is if you're a school teacher and you have some out-of-pocket expenses. And there's not a single teacher out there that I've ever known that doesn't have money they spend on their the work they do in the classroom, and they don't get reimbursed for it. Mm-hmm. And so they get to take a deduction. It's limited to $250 for a for an individual, and $500 on a on a joint return.
It's a husband and wife.
Both teachers.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. Which is not uncommon either.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. I've seen that. And what other deductions do we have there?
You know, one that you see more and more, and it's typically kind of communicated on an individual's W-2, is a health savings account deduction. And these are these special accounts that are designed to be able to be used for medical, out-of-pocket medical expenses. And you get to take a deduction, for those right on the front page of form 1040.
But folks have to be careful, because there's HSA deductions that they take for their out-of-pocket if they're making contributions. If it's on a pre-tax basis from their W-2, they don't
you
get
can't
to
double
take
dip
that.
Yes,
right,
you
right.
cannot double up. That's
so
correct.
You have to be careful, because we see it both ways sometimes.
Yep.
For folks who have high deductible health savings accounts. You know, one that I don't see as often, and I don't know why, now that when I was looking at this and preparing for the show, was moving expenses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't see it as, quite often. A lot of the moves I see for people are, perhaps they're reimbursed for quite a bit of their moving expenses through the company or their employer that's moving them. It used to be that there were more moving expenses that you were able to deduct. It's now limited to the costs of transporting your household goods from one home to the new home, and the cost one trip of transporting yourself to the from the old home to the new home.
Right, and it has to be over a certain amount of miles and a new job and different things like that.
Yes.
So folks need to be aware of all those rules. Folks, if you have questions this evening, we're talking about tax deductions and tax credits, and we're kind of giving an overview at the beginning. We're going to talk a little bit about our favorites and then some ways to plan for some of these items. If you have questions, you can call in live and talk to us, and it doesn't have to be about tax deductions or tax credits, but taxes in general. Or you can call your question into Judy Ann, and she'll write it down and bring it in to us. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is proud to present the 15th annual Heart of the Valley Antique Show on Saturday, March 7th and Sunday, March 8th. Select exhibitors will be offering quality textiles, pottery, folk art, quilts, country furniture, and more. The show returns to the historic Charles Brown Ice House in the heart of historic Bethlehem. For show hours, exhibitors, and ticket information, visit WDIY.org.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Rod Young, another CPA and CFP, and we're talking about taxes tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810, or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. And we're starting with talking about tax deductions versus tax credits, and how tax credits are great because they're dollar for dollar against your taxes. Tax deductions reduce your income, and in particular we're starting with above the line deductions, which we see on page one of your 1040. And we've highlighted educator expenses, health savings account deductions, moving expenses. Another kind of one we don't see as often are certain business expenses for certain occupations that would be performing artists, reservists, fee-based government officials. We don't see that as often, but that is the advantage there of having it on page one of the return is more than what most employees would get, which would be a miscellaneous itemized deduction on Schedule A if you itemize. So we don't see it as often, but those folks should be aware of that. Rod, another big one that we see are for people who are self-employed. They have a Schedule C or a partnership, and they have self-employed income. Mm-hmm. And there's a deduction on page one. One is the half the self-employment tax, but the other one, which really people need to be, I think, pay particular attention to because they might not realize it, is the health insurance.
Absolutely.
So can you talk about that for a minute?
Sure, yeah. And probably the largest deductions we typically see as these above, in these above-the-line deductions are for self-employed individuals. It's their health insurance deduction. It's their retirement plan contribution and that one half of the self-employment tax that you mentioned. And so if you're self-employed and you're paying for health insurance, you get to literally take a full write-off right on the front page of your tax return for your health insurance premiums. You have to be a little bit careful. Something like, say, your spouse is employed, and you have your health insurance through your spouse, and you're paying through payroll deduction a good portion of the premium. You have to be careful there, because if the employer is contributing to the cost, then that is not eligible for the self-employed health insurance
right.
deduction.
Anything that's pre-tax that you're already getting a tax benefit for is not going to, again, back to the double dipping, we can't double dip. So the self-employed folks, if they're paying for the health insurance themselves, they really need to pay attention to, because it could apply for them and their spouse as well.
Oh,
if they're paying.
Absolutely. And we all know what the cost of family or husband-wife health insurance is in this day and age. It can be $20,000. It can be significant. So that's a very large write-off for people that are self-employed.
And now, I imagine that that's also, and I haven't had this situation because usually the income's high enough that they get the full deduction when they are self-employed and paying for the insurance. But I imagine that that is limited. If their income is only $5,000 and their health insurance is $20,000, the IRS isn't going to allow them to write off more than what their
net
income is.
That,
so
that's correct.
For folks who might try to get the idea, I'm going to go, sell some lipstick and have a business, you might not be able to get the full deduction.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. And then also you mentioned the retirement accounts.
The retirement plan contributions can be very powerful, and depending on your overall financial circumstances, you can establish what's known as an individual or solo 401k retirement plan for yourself and literally put away, if you're age 50 or over, $23,000-$24,000 pre-tax, plus that's your employee contribution to your retirement plan. And then you're also, when you're self-employed, you're the employee and the employer. You can put an employer contribution into the plan depending on the amount of income you have on that Schedule C. Mm-hmm. You can be talking I've seen people with $50,000 deductions on front page of 1040 for their self-employed retirement plan contribution.
So for folks who are self-employed out there, they really need to make sure that they understand all of these deductions on page one, because it could be quite powerful for
them.
Very
powerful.
And another note on that, when you're talking about making those contributions, real quick, we like to add extra things. The 401k, the solo 401k for a self-employed person, they really need to have that set up by the year end for that tax year.
Absolutely.
So for 2014.
That means by December 31st.
Right. You have to have the account set up, but you don't necessarily have to have the plan set up,
say.
Adopt the plan. Yep. You actually don't have to fund the account at that point. Just fund or adopt the plan. If you're past the due date of the tax return, in 2015, you're just hearing us now and you're saying, shoot, I could have had a self-employed plan, you may be able to set up another kind of retirement account, a SEP IRA or something like that. But folks, the other powerful thing here is you have until the due date of the return, including extensions, to fund those self-employed plans. So lots of power. Oh, I'm sneaking ahead of myself because when I talked about ways to plan for them, I'm jumping in and
talking
about ways
to plan for them. That's quite all right. We'll plan as we go along.
Okay. Yeah, that might work better. Okay. So let me just quickly mention a couple other quick ones that aren't as large of a deduction. But if you have a penalty on a CD, on an early withdrawal, that's a deduction on page one. For folks who pay alimony under an agreement, alimony paid is a deduction. And then we talked about some other things. We have a caller who called in. Linda, we're sorry we dropped your call. You can please call back. And then we had a couple questions come in off air. We had someone asked, someone retired on Social Security and has some other income. Are the amounts they take for Medicare deductible? So I think what they're saying is they retired on Social Security. They're getting, they're paying Medicare insurance out of their Social Security, but they have some other income. If that other income is
earned income,
there you go.
Like this self-employed income that we're talking about. And then so part of their self-employed health insurance deduction could include the premiums you pay for Medicare Part B, Medicare Part D.
Right.
Absolutely.
So caller, yes, your Medicare, if you are self-employed and you are, even if the other part of their insurance is in a group plan, the Medicare still qualifies as a deduction.
Absolutely.
And we just learned that a few years ago. There was a court case, I think, that actually determined that.
That's been 3 or 4 years now, I think. That maybe a little longer because time goes pretty fast. So.
Yeah. And then we had another question. Are COBRA insurance costs deductible for the former employer? Not for the self-employed health insurance, because COBRA is still part of a group plan,
okay,
is what I understood. It would be deductible on Schedule A medical expenses, whether or not you're over those limitations.
Right.
But not, I believe COBRA is still part of a group plan.
Okay.
So it does not qualify as the self-employed insurance employee. Oh, for the employee, for COBRA insurance is not usually offered to the employee or former employee for COBRA.
Right. I think it's really a Schedule A subject to the Schedule A medical, total medical expense limitation.
Right, because you are paying it out of
pocket. Yes.
You're paying it out of pocket because you're no longer an employee to get COBRA.
Absolutely.
COBRA is for folks who have severed employment. We have our next break. Folks, love the calls, love the questions.
Yeah,
keep them coming in. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the Tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back, and this is Lori Siebert, your host of Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening Rod Young. My pen's falling apart, so it distracts me. We are talking, and Rod is a CPA and CFP and financial advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we are talking about tax deductions and tax credits and different deductions that we have on page one of the return. And if we have time, we're going to kind of double check on that COBRA question.
Mm-hmm.
But until I have a chance to look that up, let's talk about some of the other deductions. We had said a self-employed person, Rod, could take a deduction for contributions to a self-employed retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another deduction on page one of the return for folks who are contributing to retirement accounts, and that's an IRA deduction.
Yeah, sure, that good old IRA deduction.
Yeah.
That's been around a long, long time, you know, subject to limitations based on your income and whether or not you're a participant in an employer-sponsored plan. But there are still many people out there who get to take their, you know, take an IRA deduction right on the front page of form, you know, Form 1040.
So you might want to do a little planning to see if you can get a deduction. And sometimes spouses, there's higher limitations, income limitations, if you have a spouse who's not in a retirement plan. So you want
absolutely
to make sure you understand the limitations. Just because you think, oh, I have a retirement plan at work, I can't take a deduction, you still might be able to if you have a spouse.
And keep in mind, you have until April 15th. To make the IRA contributions. You could actually put the contribution, if you haven't made it by the time you file your tax return, but you're expecting a refund, as long as you have that refund before April 15th, you can use the refund to make the IRA contribution. So
that's a great point. And we can do that with IRAs, but you do have to make your, if you have a self-employed 401k, that we have to make that contribution by the time we file our tax return.
Yep.
But the IRA, you have a little time. In fact, you can use your refund to help fund, as Rod said. We have a caller. On line one, we have Linda, who has a question about capital gains.
Great. Hi, Linda.
Linda, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi.
I actually heard my answer about my self-employment before I got cut off before.
Oh, okay.
But I want to ask one more question about it. If your business is operating at a loss, can you still take the self-employed health insurance deduction for the Medicare and any supplemental benefits?
Not as a self-employed health insurance deduction, no, Linda, because you don't have a net profit in your business. So then you would just look at it and see it as part of your medical expense deductions on Schedule A, and does it help you to get above the threshold to be deductible.
Okay, good. And then on the capital gains, I have a question. Being that we're retired now and collecting our pensions, our Social Security, of course, everything above that line now is becoming making our Social Security get taxable.
Don't you hate that?
But I love my fabulous capital gains that I'm making on my investments.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way around it?
There are ways to try to tax manage your capital gains, but, you know, the bottom line is to the extent you do end up with net capital gains on your tax return, they're going to be part of that gross income calculation to figure out how much of your Social Security benefits are taxable. So what we try to do is help people to tax manage their capital gains by harvesting losses during the year or at the end of the year to try to offset some of the gains. That's probably one of the best ways, and there are a variety of strategies that you can use to try to harvest losses, but that's probably the best way to manage that. At the end of the day, I'd rather, if I have a lot of nice capital gains, then so be it. But
How long can that, I know that you can take a maximum of $3,000 loss off each year.
Mm-hmm.
How long does that last?
Until you've used it all up.
Okay, there is no number of years.
No, there are some carry forwards that do have a time limit, but that one does not.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I did find an answer to the COBRA question. It is not a deductible, and it is because the deduction requires that your insurance plan is established for your trade or business.
There
even
you go.
Though Medicare counts, mm-hmm. which is interesting to
yep.
me. Medicare counts, but COBRA insurance does not.
Very
because
good.
It's a continuation of your employee insurance plans. So that means it's not established for your business.
Excellent.
Okay, so
yep.
good. We got that answered.
Yep.
Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So we've talked about some of the page one deductions, mm-hmm. alimony, penalties on CDs, IRA deductions. And when we talk about the IRA deduction, we're talking about a traditional IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Roth IRAs do not give us a deduction on page one.
That's correct. They don't really affect the tax return, but they're still a great thing. We're big fans of them, and we'll have another show about it.
Yeah, we are big fans of those. There's also student loan interest deduction. What's interesting to me on that is there's so many people who have student loan interest, but they make too much money to get the deduction. So one of the things that happens, that's one of those, again, deductions that's limited. And excuse me, if you're married filing joint, the limitation starts at $130,000. And if you're single, the limitation starts at $65,000.
So we see a lot of people where, unfortunately, they're paying those student loans. But, yeah, I agree with you.
Don't get the interest.
Don't get much benefit
yeah.
from it.
And the tuition and fees deduction, that's one of our first education credits that we see on our tax return on page one. There's a number of different education credits, but that's the first one we see on page one. And the tuition and fees deduction also has a limitation starting at $130,000 for married filing joint and $65,000 for single. So folks who have education, there are different ones that, you know, you can take. It's like going to Wendy's and picking what kind of hamburger you want with all the different toppings. There's so many different education opportunities out there. It all depends on if you're undergrad, if you're a lifetime learner, you know, if you took money out of a 529, if you, you know, had room and board or you didn't. So lots of rules around education. So the big flag there is if you have education, seek help.
Read publication 970. Get to know it very, very well. Yes, it's one of my IRS favorites.
That's because Rod has four children.
So a couple other very quick things. Not only are there phase outs for those deductions, but there's also caps on what those deductions are. Like the tuition and fees deduction cap is $4,000 if you're not subject to the phase outs. And I think the student loan interest deduction is capped at $2,500. I believe.
If you're married, filing joint,
yes,
it might be like $1,250 if you're if you're single, possibly.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I just saw that recently. Folks, if you have questions this evening, you can give us a call. We're coming up on the half hour. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 8810. We're talking about tax deductions and tax credits. And the next, as we come back out of this next break, we're going to talk about Schedule A, itemized deductions, and that's the next part of deductions. And then we will get to our wonderful tax credits, which are going to give you a dollar-for-dollar savings on your taxes. So after this next break, we'll continue our discussion with Rod Young, CPA, CFP. And the number, again, is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And we're back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. You can listen online as well at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. You can stream online. And that's especially nice for folks who are outside our listening area that might benefit from the programming here. So please share that information. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about tax deductions and tax credits. We're going to quickly highlight Schedule A, which is another way to have some deductions. That doesn't always apply to everyone. So we're going to go over that fairly quickly because I really want to get to tax credits and then some ways to plan for them. If you have questions about anything related to income tax, you're welcome to give us a call. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. So, Rod, let's give a broad brush of a Schedule A itemized deductions.
Right. There are a long list of deductions, but really at a high level, we're talking medical expenses. We're talking taxes. That's income, state and local income taxes and real estate taxes. We're talking various types of interest, primarily for people that's you know, mortgage interest, home equity interest. We're talking charitable contributions, and then there's this mysterious long list of miscellaneous deductions. So that at a high level is what we're talking about on Schedule A. And people who itemize are people whose the total of all of their deductions is greater than their standard deduction. You take the higher of the two.
Okay. And folks, a lot of times I know that people will think all their medical is deductible, but just as we've been talking about limitations, and there's a big limitation on medical expenses. It always seems to me, Rod, at the point where someone gets in their life where they don't make enough money to file a tax return is when they have the highest medical deductions.
Medical expenses, right.
And they don't always need those. But
and so the planning they should do there are, so we're going to go right to the planning, are things like, well, is that a year when maybe a Roth conversion might work because maybe they haven't quite started taking their required minimum distributions yet. So there's definitely opportunities there. I had one not too long ago where someone going into a skilled nursing facility, and a large portion of the cost of going into that facility created a very, very large medical expense deduction. We're talking $100,000. Mm-hmm. So where can we now create some income opportunity to absorb that that kind of deduction? And in that example, I believe we took some pre-tax money and in a pre-tax retirement account and moved it over to a Roth IRA.
So it's converting traditional IRAs that would be income taxable on those distributions. You pay the tax today, but here you have a huge deduction to offset it so that you're not paying the tax. And then you might say, well, mom is so old and she's going to have these huge expenses and she might not ever even, you know, need that deduction or need that money. It's planning for the next generation.
Next generation. That Roth money then passes income tax-free to the next generation.
Yeah, it might be included for inheritance tax purposes, but not for income tax purposes. Rod, we had a call from Melissa, and she had asked, I pay a student loan, and I didn't find out it was tax deductible until this year. Can I take both this and last year now combined?
That's a great question. And actually, I just had someone who I helped on this issue. The answer to your question, unfortunately, is no, you can't take a prior year's deduction and a current year deduction, and just because you forgot to take the prior year and, you know, on the prior year tax return, just combine it into this year because you figure it's all even over the span of those years. What you need to do is, there is a remedy, though, for you. And I actually just did one of these yesterday for someone that went back to student loan interest back to 2011, where they had almost $4,000 of student loan interest that a tax document had not been issued. Mm. Then they got a letter from, I'm not going to name who the financial institution was, saying, we failed to report this to you. We will even provide you with free tax return, amending your tax return help. So the bottom line is you would need to amend the tax return for the year you missed the deduction, report the deduction on that return, and request a refund of the appropriate amount. The form to amend your tax return is Form 1040X. It really is not a very complicated form to file, but that is how you would take care of that situation.
So, Melissa, just remember that there is a cap on that deduction of student loan interest. So just go back to whatever year you might have had it, whether you might have had it even in 2012, 2013. Make sure you understand what the cap was for that year. And then get out your 1040X. And in the first column, you write your originally filed numbers, and then you write the adjustment in the middle column, and then the last column is the new numbers. So hopefully you'll get a refund.
Yep.
But it's definitely worth doing it.
Yeah, I just helped this individual they're getting a refund of about $250, $300 because they hadn't deducted any of that interest, and they were able to take a $2,500 deduction on that amended tax return.
That's great. Great call, Melissa. Thank you.
Yep.
Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we briefly talked about Schedule A, itemized deductions. It's, you know, there's a lot there.
A lot.
And we just want to alert folks that, you know, there is a standard deduction that people can take. It's if all of these kinds of different expenses that Rod described are more than the standard deduction, then you want to look at itemizing on Schedule A. A lot of people call it the long form. And I want to also alert folks that may have not itemized in the past. Sometimes I see widows who have survived a spouse. They don't realize that now they may be able to itemize. They miss that because they say, oh, we never itemized, because married filing joint has a fairly big standard deduction, especially for the elderly. And then, you know, if a spouse passes and you have high real estate taxes and charitable contributions, it's time for you to revisit whether you itemize or not. Now so the deductions we were talking about offset income, folks. So now we're going to talk about tax credits. And Rod had mentioned tax credits are dollar for dollar savings. So what kind of tax credits do we have, Rod? And we usually see those on page 2 of the return.
Of the tax return, absolutely. And there's a long list of these as well. The ones we see the most are the education credits. So there is a
the American Opportunity
Thank you.
Credit.
an American Opportunity Credit, a lifetime learning credit. So we see those quite a bit. We see the Dependent Care Credit quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
We see quite a few earned income credit situations out there. So we can talk about that a little. There is the Child Tax Credit, so that is a very, very common one. Foreign Tax Credit, we see that one quite a bit, yeah.
For folks who have, mutual funds or investments that, you know, are in, if you're invested in, you know, emerging markets, worldwide income. They may take tax out on your dividends. That could be a deduction for you.
The retirement savings contribution credit. I see that from time to time. I know you see that from
time to time. That's one of my favorite credits. Yeah. Can I quick get that in to make sure we get that in? And then I would like to talk about the difference between the child credit and the dependent care credit, because the dependent care credit is important if you have a flexible spending account. And some people think, oh, I'm doing that through work, so I don't get the deduction. I want to talk about if you spend more than your flexible spending account. But first, let me highlight the retirement savers credit. It's a credit in addition to a tax deduction if you do an IRA or a 401k. So if you put money into a 401k, you're saving for retirement, that comes off your W-2. If you put money into a traditional IRA, that comes off page one, like we talked about earlier. So that is a deduction for you for income tax, but then it might also help you qualify for a retirement savers credit. The retirement savers credit would even apply if you put money in a Roth, if you meet the adjusted gross income limitation. So for people who have page one income less than $60,000, if you're married filing joint, you may qualify for this retirement savers credit. And if you're head of household, it's $45,000. If you're single, it's $30,000. And the credit is 10 to 50% of your contributions with a maximum tax credit of $2,000 for married filing joint and $1,000 for single.
How's that for a rate of return on your investment?
It's free money. And there are certain people that what I'll do each year is I'll actually figure out the minimum amount that they have to put into the retirement credit or in the retirement account to maximize that.
Right.
Because again, the beautiful thing is for the traditional IRA, we have till April 15th of the following year to do that. So that works out really well. So I wanted to make sure I got that in. Let me say the phone number again, and then we're going to talk about some of the dependent care and child care credits. The phone number is 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So, Rod, I wanted to distinguish the difference between a child tax credit is you if you're within certain income limits and your children are under a certain age, you just
17,
get
I believe. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
You get a tax credit.
Just
here you go.
Just for having a kid. And we all know it doesn't come anywhere near close to the covering the cost, but hey.
Yeah,
every little bit helps.
And I don't know all those limitations off the top of my head, but you want to check that out if you have children under 17 to see if you qualify for the child tax credit.
It begins to phase out if you're married joint, your gross income, that page one income, is over $110,000.
Okay, so this would apply to a lot of people who have children under 17, right?
Absolutely, and $75,000 if you are single, head of household.
Okay, and the dependent care credit is a credit when,
and I'm going to back up.
Okay,
that child credit. I don't know if you may have said it and I missed it. It's $1,000 per child.
Oh yeah, $1,000.
So it's significant.
And for some people, there is a refundable one as well. And I don't know the limitations on that, but part of that there is an additional child credit within certain income limitations. So again, dollar for dollar. Now let's talk about the dependent care credit.
Sure. So the dependent care credit is you and your spouse both work and have income and you're paying for child care to allow both of you to work, there's a tax credit available to you. It's got certain caps. It is one of these credits that is not phased out for high income. It does come into some reduction,
right?
But even at a relatively high income level, you can actually still get a credit there,
right?
So.
And there's also flexible spending accounts that people can actually put money away through payroll deduction to cover child care, but there's a cap on that.
That's right. Yep.
And as we know, I think it's
$5,000
now.
Yes,
I think it was $2,500 per employer, possibly up to $5,000 for child care.
Yep.
$5,000 is the cap. But
right.
Quite often we might have child care expenses that might be $10,000. So the child care credit is capped at $6,000 worth of expenses. So there's a disconnect between what we could put into a flexible spending account, which is the number one best place, because that is definitely tax-free for federal. But anything between $5,000 and $6,000, this is the piece I don't want people to forget about, that they actually can get that additional tax credit that you were talking
about
on the difference.
On that difference, $1,000. And I think very easy to overlook that.
And you want to make sure, though, if you are taking money out for dependent care through a flexible spending account, you really need to have the expenses. Otherwise, it gets added back to your income.
Right.
Do you want to talk about the American Opportunity Credit a bit?
Sure. The American Opportunity Credit is a credit for, higher education expenses. It is subject to certain phase outs of adjusted gross income, but it can be a meaningful credit.
Yeah, it's up to $2,500 on $4,000 of out of pocket expenses.
Yeah, it happens pretty fast. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So
the limitations, I'm just glancing at those quick, start at $160,000. So for folks who have students who are going to college, this is one of the planning opportunities here. You have to be careful, because if you also have money in a college savings account, a 529, the IRS doesn't let you get the benefits on all these different education expenditures.
Right.
So if you're taking money out of a 529 and it's not taxable, you can't now also qualify for the American Opportunity Credit.
With the same expenses.
With the same expenses.
Right, right.
So you want to make sure that you're paying out of pocket at least $4,000 if you're going to qualify for this credit.
Right.
I don't like to see people miss this credit.
And this credit is literally, it's 100% of the first $2,000 of your expenses. So that's, that's pretty good. And then it's 25% of the next $2,000.
So at a minimum, you'd probably want to have $2,000 out of pocket.
Yep.
And that's then the rest of the expenses you could take out of a 529 account. We're on our last break.
Mm-hmm.
If folks have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And our weather for the Lehigh Valley, 41 degrees currently. Tonight, a 90% chance of rain, snow, and sleet, low around 23. New snow and sleet accumulation, 1 to 3 inches possible. Tomorrow, Thursday, an 80% chance of snow, mainly before 4 p.m. New snow accumulation, 2 to 4 inches possible. Thursday night, a 30% chance of snow before 7 p.m., and the low of 4 degrees will feel as if it were 7 below zero. That's Thursday night. And then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're going to see some sunshine. High Friday of 25, Saturday of 37, and for Sunday, 40 degrees. Now, I have a question for Lori and Rod. I promised them I was going to quiz them on a couple of presidents of the United States. It's March 4th, and on this date in 1793, George Washington's second inauguration was the shortest speech of all the inaugural speeches, 133 words.
Wow.
That's fewer than what you've given us this evening. And the longest one was in 1841 by William Henry Harrison, 8,443 words. So the question, which one would you have preferred to attend?
George Washington.
1793. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you, John. Folks, if you have questions, we still have a little bit of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I have Rod Young, CPA, CFP, PFS, in the studio with me this evening. We're talking about taxes. The phone number is 610-758-8810. So we were talking about the American Opportunity Credit, mm-hmm. and different ways to plan for that. Make sure you actually have out-of-pocket expenses, and be careful on the when you're paying tuition.
Be careful when you're paying tuition. Be careful in the timing of when you're paying tuition. And then another important thing, I believe, with the American Opportunity, unlike the Lifetime Learning Credit, is that it's limited to 4 years.
Okay. And the Lifetime Learning Credit? you can go to school forever?
Yeah,
and
basically.
And get the deduction?
Yes, yep.
Okay, just different limitations on or deductible tax credits on those. So
That's correct.
And part of the American Opportunity Credit can be refundable for folks, too. So that's one of those power credits.
Yeah, I believe up to, so that total, the maximum credit is $2,500 for the American Opportunity, up to, so if it reduces your tax to zero, then I believe up to $1,000 of it, 40%, is refundable to you.
Okay, that's great. Good to know. Other credits? Foreign tax credit isn't always as big of a credit, but it's still one you don't want to miss.
It's still there, yeah. And so this is if you have stocks or mutual funds. We primarily see it with mutual funds that invest in foreign countries, invest in foreign securities, and they pay dividends and capital gains over the course of the year. They will withhold some foreign tax from that, and you want to make sure you get that foreign tax credit and that foreign tax information in terms of what you've paid, and you get to claim a credit for it right on page two of your form 1040.
It's a horrible schedule.
It's a horrible, yeah, thank
horrible
you.
Schedule.
Thank you. It's form 1116. There are certain, I think, de minimis rules where you don't have to prepare the form 1116 if the amount of foreign taxes and the amount of the income from the foreign tax is relatively small. I don't know those amounts off the top of my head, Lori, but there are some minimal exceptions to having to prepare that form 1116.
Yeah, and on occasion we see folks who might have some foreign other kinds of income which might garner larger foreign tax credits, so you don't want to miss those either. There is a minimum tax credit that we don't see happen very often. So for folks who've had alternative minimum tax in the past, there may be a minimum tax credit that might carry forward. Residential energy efficient property credits. A lot of people think they qualify for those, and we're not seeing it as much.
We're seeing fewer of those now. Some of those have been phased out, and others that are still there are, I think, are getting close to being, eliminated.
They seem to be smaller amounts. A lot of people have already taken them, and there is like a lifetime cap on those, so if you keep track of that kind of thing.
There are some larger ones there, though, and again, we don't see these often, but there's one. I had a client had generated a tax credit, I believe it was like $20,000 from one of these energy efficient improvements.
Like a geothermal.
Geothermal.
I did a show on geothermal, so
yes.
It's a podcast people can listen to.
Yeah, and so we literally used that credit. So you talk about planning, we took advantage of that credit to do like Roth conversions and to soak up that credit.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about these credits that we have. There's also the earned income credit. I am not as familiar with that.
I'm not a specialist in that area, but certainly it's for people with earned. You got this is a key here. It's an earned income credit, so it's for people with relatively modest levels of earned income, and particularly if you've got dependents. Mm-hmm. You're not required to have dependents, but most of the time you're based on the income levels, you're going to need to have dependents for this credit, but it is a refundable credit, and it can be several thousand dollars.
Wow. So the earned income credit could be partly offsetting tax, and then even if you've reduced your tax to zero, a little bit of a refundable credit.
I've seen surprising refunds generated by the earned income credit.
Okay. And then a much rarer one, though I have seen, is a federal tax paid on fuels. So if people are paying... are using fuel for off-road use, like in tractors or equipment on a farm, they may get a tax credit for federal taxes paid on that fuel.
I believe I have three clients.
Oh, okay. I have one.
And so, it's been a credit of several hundred dollars for, based on the amount of fuel that they use.
Yeah, so lots of different ones that you have to be aware of. So some of your favorite credits were at that time Rod, where we can talk about some of our favorites and then any little bit of planning that we can do?
Sure. I think the ones that we, my favorite would be the education-related ones, just because, as we all know, the cost of higher education is just, has gone through the roof. And so, and there are so many opportunities, whether it's tuition and fees deduction or student loan interest deduction or American Opportunity or lifetime learning. There's a lot of different opportunities that were 529 accounts or what have you. There's a lot of opportunities in the college funding area for income tax savings. And that publication that I mentioned earlier is critical.
Publication 970. And a lot of folks are probably filling out FAFSA forms right now, need to have their tax returns done or base it on the prior year. And they're going to understand the need for education credits when they see how much they have to pay for education.
It's funny. I have many people send me, I need my tax return by January 31st because I have to do the FAFSA form. And I say to them, well, you're not even going to have any of your tax documents by January 31st, so it's going to be hard to do that. But we try to put those people right in the front because it is a stressful thing to get those FAFSAs completed. You are allowed to use estimated information on your initial FAFSA filing, and then if things change, you're allowed to go back and change it. So just be aware of that if you're stressed out about your FAFSA.
And another education benefit that we should mention as residents of Pennsylvania is on the Pennsylvania return.
That's a great point. Here we are talking about all these great federal tax deductions. There are some great state tax savings opportunities as well. So in Pennsylvania, if you make a contribution to one of these to a 529 plan for education, you can take a pretty good deduction on your Pennsylvania tax return. It's based on how much income you have. The cap on your deduction is based on how much income you have, based on how much income your spouse may have, how many
contributions you may have, how many people.
Yeah, exactly. But it can be a pretty sizable $14,000 per parent per child deduction if you've got enough income on the tax return.
And it could be to your own child, it could be to a grandchild, it could be to a niece, it could be to a nephew, as long as you can identify who you're making that contribution to that 529. And Rod, if you had the 529 and I wanted to make a contribute, and you have it for benefit of your daughter, and I wanted to make a contribution, maybe she's my goddaughter, I wanted to make a contribution to that 529, I can actually get a deduction for a 529 contribution I make for your daughter.
Right, that you have no interest in. Lori, I'll give you my daughter. We'll make sure you have my daughter's name, and I'll give you the 529 account number, and we'll...
So lots of good things to know about. But I think so often people just make a jump in their head that wouldn't count.
I have seen people save, $500, $600, $800 on a Pennsylvania tax return. Pennsylvania does not allow many deductions. I think they're the only state in the country that has an income tax that doesn't allow you to deduct your retirement plan contributions.
Right.
They don't allow many deductions.
Right.
And so take advantage of that one.
So one of the deductions that we had kind of talked about on the federal return, miscellaneous itemized deductions for itemizing Schedule A, that's where we have things like unreimbursed employee business expenses. And that is one of the other deductions. That's one of the very few deductions we get on a Pennsylvania return.
Yes, that's
so,
a good point.
Union dues, people have union dues or have to wear uniforms or license fees like nurses. That's where we usually see that.
And other little nuances, I don't know if we have any New Jersey listeners out there, but I always think of the medical expense deduction. Those high thresholds on your federal tax return are like 7.5% to 10% of your adjusted gross income. So people say, I'm not even going to worry about telling you about my medical expenses because I know they're not going to be deducted. If you're a New Jersey resident, the threshold's 2% of your gross income. So that much lower threshold to reach, and you can get a deduction on your New Jersey tax return.
That's a great point.
So for anybody east of the river, think about that.
And we have Phillipsburg listeners, so that's a great point as well. Anything odd that you've been seeing come up in tax season so far, other than software?
Software and, I don't know. It's, I think it's just been a typical tax season so far. If anything, probably the one thing is I think people are ready with their information a little earlier this year.
I feel that too.
And I think it's because the last 6 to 8 weeks have been so tough winter-wise that they're sitting at home on a weekend saying, okay, I'm not going outside. I'm not going anywhere. I guess I got to get my tax stuff together. So
that must be. Now, having said that too, folks need to be aware. Sometimes we're seeing corrected 1099s come out for these dividend statements. And the next question is, I've already filed my return. Do I need to amend my return or refile it? What do I do?
That's a great question. I just had a call today. Hey, and I've got it in my, you know, the person doing my tax, this is somebody where I actually don't prepare their tax return. And the amount of the correction on the 1099 was $10.
Right.
And so I said, look, I would probably ignore that.
Right. It won't even change the return.
It won't change the return. If it changes by a dollar, no one's going to care. Yeah, certainly, if there are material changes to a 1099, then you really should make sure you get that return corrected.
Right. So we look for materiality on whether we correct or not. And sometimes the IRS might, if it's not terribly material, if they're interested in your $5, they'll send you a notice and then just kind of pay it then.
That is one of those where they will send the notice because they match the 1099s to what's on your tax return.
Yeah, I've seen some times where I think they look for materiality too. If it's like a dollar, they're not going to send it.
They won't send it. I typically don't see that. Yeah.
Rod, thanks so much for being here.
Great to be here, Lori. I look forward to next week.
Yeah, we're going to be here again next week. We're going to be talking about the difference. Wait, no, what are we talking about next week? I kind of forgot. I didn't write it down, apparently. I thought I had written it down. Well, we'll figure it out next week then. We'll talk about, Schedule D, capital gains.
Great.
And losses, and the different things on Schedule D.
Excellent.
Rod, how do people reach you if they're interested?
610-868-9000.
And thank you, John Pierce, for being here. Thank you, Judy Ann, for being here. Rod, of course, thank you for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Oh, Tom's not here this week. I think someone's filling in for him. But make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.